This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Seth, you watched the all 22 of this game against the Bengals, and I know the meaningfulness of the game itself within the standings was practically nothing, but there are certain guys on this team that are worth watching as we head into the offseason, new head coach, new general manager, a new season coming up next year. Did you want to share some of your thoughts of some of the things that you saw, particularly on the defensive side of the ball?
Look, Sean, I know you're not a big fan of Greg Jennings as the color commentator for this game, and I can understand why. There were a few curious things that he said during the game. I think one very, very true thing that he said, as he was, for some reason, wearing a green velour tuxedo. I guess that was a Christmas thing. Did you notice what he was wearing?
I did.
It was a green tuxedo. Greg Jennings, we interviewed him at the Super Bowl 1 year, and I got to tell you, presents very well in person.
I believe
very well dressed, like his beard was perfectly groomed and whatnot. So he can pull off the green tuxedo in a way that didn't seem like some weird Christmas bad sweater party.
He's got great commentator energy. I just thought some of his takes were poor. That's all.
One thing that he said after one of the numerous screens that went 15, 20, 25 yards without anybody touching the running back was that as a defensive player, you have to play with some feel. You have to feel things. And I thought that pretty much summed it up for the defense on Sunday. They did not play with any feel whatsoever. And I'm going back and I'm watching, and just without getting too technical about it, when they were playing zone defense, they had no feel for where they were in the zones, where their zones even were at times, when to break on the ball, when to have your eyes on the quarterback. And it was the linebackers, it was John Reed especially on those screens. John Reed got so turned around and so confused and so lost. He did, Sean, he looked like a first-generation Roomba, just kind of bouncing around, wandering around the space, not knowing where he was going or what he was supposed to do. It was really, really bad for John Reed in some of the zone coverages. That was the most disappointing thing for me, was how lost these guys looked just running simple cover three. It was that part was really bad, and they just didn't have a feel. They were just, it was like high school kids when you teach them how to play coverage, they're just running to a spot on the field and then kind of looking around and trying to figure out where their bearings are. That's what Terrell Adams looked like. That's what Zach Cunningham looked like. That's what a lot of those guys looked like. They were just running to a spot and then trying to figure out after they got to their spot if there was anybody they were supposed to cover. That it almost looked like they hadn't watched any film at all.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you. So what is that? I mean, Zach Cunningham is a veteran guy. Terrell Adams is a journeyman, but he's played a lot of football. John Reed's a rookie, so whatever. I mean, there's no excuse for running around the way he was, especially early in the game. He looked lost out there. Seth, from your experience, what is that? Is that guy's just not paying attention during the week? Is it bad coaching? More often than not, what is that? Especially in week 16 against a bad football team.
That's where I'm trying to be honest about this too, because it's hard on defense sometimes to figure out exactly. Like when a guy makes a really bad mental error on defense, sometimes you just make a mental snafu, but there are times where you're trying to play the tendencies. And that's where with John Reed, I'm trying to cut him a break because I know he's a really bright guy. Sometimes with bright guys, and I know this having gone to a nerd school, sometimes the bright guys are the worst on the field because they think too much and they're trying to, It's like when you're, it's like trying to play chess where you're trying to think like seven plays ahead, but the guy across from you is just knocking you down like it's nothing because you're just, you're thinking too much. I say chess like I ever played chess. I play checkers, and I'm bad at checkers because I try to think too far ahead.
I bought a chess table for Amy for Christmas. We're going to learn how to play chess together.
Because you watched The Queen's Gambit.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, look, I know myself well enough, Sean. I watched The Queen's Gambit, too. I got inspired, and I went out and I bought a $5 chessboard.
Yeah.
Because I know me too well.
That happens to me with TV shows a lot. When I watched The Sopranos, I went on a four-state killing spree. It was really, really weird. I got inspired.
So, there was a play a couple of those times on screens, and it happened. It was the first play of the first half. And I want to say it was the first play or the first series of the second half. John Reed got burned in exactly the same way.
Yep.
Where he's supposed to be covering the flat in cover three. And he turns around
and runs
straight backwards.
It's like he's running the locker room.
Thing. Yeah. Like, so when something like that happens, I ask myself, okay, what was he thinking? There was probably some tweak that didn't, where it wasn't just, it wasn't just vanilla cover three. He was doing something because otherwise it was the damnedest thing because he completely lost sense of where he was supposed to be in the defense. But it was really, really bad. And that's why Gio Bernard ran 20 yards without even being touched because he was like almost trailing Zach Cunningham or Terrell Adams behind him in his zone. It was really weird.
It was wild to watch. All right, Seth, I think people want to know your thoughts on the defensive line, given that's where you played a decade in the league. Before we get to that, here's Romeo Crennel on Ross Blacklock yesterday.
Well, I think if he has a good offseason, and when we talk offseason, that includes a weight program, strength and conditioning, all right, the OTAs, the individual practice time, and then a training camp, and then preseason games. And then if he can get all of that done, I think that his ability will begin to show up a lot more.
That's interesting because I think that's a veiled COVID reference right there by Romeo. I don't get as worked up, Seth, when a coach attributes COVID in this offseason to the underproduction of individual players. I'm not saying it's a great excuse. When they use it as a team excuse, I have an issue with that because all 32 teams are dealing with it. Could it be that certain players needed a full offseason, a normal offseason, more than other players would at certain positions or just maybe given their background coming into the league, that sort of thing?
I think that's possible. Except that you're at week 17 now.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of the stuff that Ross Blacklock is struggling with is stuff that he struggled with in week one. And I can see where he has worked at it. And sometimes in the games, he's getting in trouble because I can see that he's almost not in the same way that John Reed might be thinking through things in a nerdy type of way. Ross Blacklock is thinking through technique. Like he's trying to take on a double team the right way. But sometimes he's misreading the block. So he thinks he's getting double teamed, but it's actually a scoop block. I don't want to get too technical here. He's misreading some things. But other things are just simple technique errors where I told you in the preseason that he drops his head. And I've said this pretty much every other week when we've talked about Ross Blacklock. He drops his head when he's charging off the ball. And he's like headbutting offensive linemen with the top of his head. In the NFL, that gets you dumped on your face. You lose your feet because of it. The old saying is, you go where your head goes. And it's not like he needed training camp to fix that. He should have fixed that somewhere along the way. He's got to fix that. If he doesn't fix some of these little technique things, he's not going to be able to play, at least in this scheme. Now, they'll have a different scheme next year. When it comes to the athletic side of things, when it comes to when he's slanting, when he's on blitzes and whatnot, you can see why he was taken in the second round. He is explosive. He is athletic. There is potential there, and I think maybe in different schemes, he might have actually had a more productive rookie season. But like when I saw three different guys play nose tackle in the game between Blacklock and then Andrew Brown, who's number 97, and that Alufohi kid, the number 98.
Big Z.
Big Z is what we'll call him.
Yeah.
I'm sure I'm botching his name. Those other two nondescript guys, did a much better job of like just the run stuffing stuff. The putting your hands into the center, knocking them back, throwing the center down, making a tackle. Those guys looked better and more stout than Blacklock did. But if I had to watch them as a scout and say, all right, which guy's got more potential, I'm going to still say Blacklock.
Sure.
I'm going to say, Blacklock's got more. Blacklock has been stuck in this mode where every time I watch him, he'll have a few really bad plays in a game, but then he'll have a few plays where he gets really close to making a nice tackle for a loss, but he just can't seal the deal. So, like, I'm right now, I could see by this point next year me saying, you know what, wow, he's really come along, and he's actually helped us win some games. Or I could equally see us saying at this point next year, like, boy, I don't know what happened. He just never got better from week one till now.
Okay, more depressing part of the DeAndre Hopkins trade. That David Johnson took 16 weeks to finally have a 100-yard game, or that the street free agent whose name we can't pronounce looks better at nose tackle than the draft pick that you got in that trade?
When I watch that, it's tough. And I can see how hard it is to be a scout, because I used to hate, like, when I was a player, I'd see guys like that, Big Z, and as a player, you're like, this kid plays his ass off. He's like, he's doing all the things that a lot of veteran players can't do. And you'd say, why is this guy not making the team? Why is he not getting more reps? But now that I'm further removed from it and I watch, you look and you see, well yeah, but he doesn't move like Blacklock.
Right,
like Blacklock,
right.
It should be. Blacklock should be so much better than he is. Why can't you be better than you are? And you can see how some of these guys, because they're second or third round picks, they keep getting opportunity after opportunity, and there's other guys like Big Z who can do some of the basics really, really well, but you can see where the ceiling is. Like, okay, he's just – his athleticism has a certain ceiling, and you understand why people get enamored with the upside of players.
One anonymous executive says the Texans – he thinks the Texans will look to the college ranks for their next head coach. Why they will definitely not be alone in looking to the college ranks is next. All right, so there's an article in The Athletic from Mike Sando, and it's about Urban Meyer. Well, it's sort of a six questions about the NFL. He does it each week. And one of the primary questions in this week's edition of it has to do with Urban Meyer, who it's been reported by Adam Schefter that two NFL teams have reached out to Urban Meyer. It's believed that at least one of them is the Jacksonville Jaguars, which would make a ton of sense. The Jaguars have the first pick in the draft. It's going to be Trevor Lawrence in all likelihood. Jacksonville is an hour from where Urban Meyer had a lot of success collegiately at Florida. If Urban Meyer's looking to eventually get into the NFL, as long as he can tolerate some losing early on, in all likelihood, he would be in a great situation there, as long as the general manager is using those draft picks correctly. So there's debate and discussion with executives about how good a hire Urban Meyer would be at the NFL level. There's also Sando saying that there are three preferred landing spots for Meyer if he heads to the NFL. Jacksonville, Detroit, and the Houston Texans. And so, Seth, the quotes that are in here about Urban Meyer going to the Texans are very interesting. One of them's a little longer. The other one is just a short observation. We'll get to the longer one in just a second. But I thought the interesting thing, just a sort of an offshoot comment by one executive, said that I heard early on when the Texans job came open, they wanted to look in the college ranks for a head coach. Did that surprise you that it was something that an executive would look at and that would be something noticeable enough to where college coach would be part of the description?
No, it didn't surprise me, and I welcome that news, because honestly, I think too many times people get stuck into this tunnel vision when they start thinking about, if you look too much to like the averages in a coaching search in the NFL, then you kind of paint yourself into a corner real quick. If you start saying, well, we want to hire an offensive-minded coach, or, well, we want to hire a defensive-minded, well, we only want to hire a guy who's got a lot of NFL experience. Like, you start all of a sudden, you think about it. Okay, let's say hypothetically there are 100 potential head coaches out there. You start making restrictions like that, and you could lop that pool down to 20 real quick.
Easy.
So all of a sudden, there's 80 candidates sitting out there. one of whom statistically is probably better. There's probably one. Statistically, your chances are better that there's one out there that's better than these 20 you have. So yeah, I think you got to really, you got to broaden your search. And the vast majority of NFL coaching hires end up being considered failures. That's just the way it works. It's really, really hard to have a success. So to limit yourself to just pro guys, I think you're screwing yourself over, especially when you have time. When you have when you gave yourself 12, 13 extra weeks to get a head start on these things, then by all means, really, really comb the desert for any possible guy out there. And then I also think what happens is in the trend in the NFL is to hire guys basically who have zero head coaching experience. And you're trying to project how a coordinator is going to be as a head coach when he's got no genuine experience coaching a football team. Whereas in college, generally you're going to be looking for guys who have coached NFL talent as a head coach already. You know, who is, as a college head coach too, you talk about being the GM and the head coach. You're the head coach, you're the GM, you're the recruiter, you do all those things in college. You've got a much better feel for the multitasking element of being a head coach. And I think that frankly, sometimes the schematic differences are overplayed and overblown. There's a little bit of the problem with the NFL sometimes is they love patting themselves on the back a little too much, and they think they're a little smarter than they actually are. That's why it took so long for the zone read or the back shoulder fade or any of these other innovations to reach the NFL, because you got all these NFL gatekeepers acting like they invented the game. So, yeah, I gave you a really long answer of saying, hell yeah, go look at some college guys.
Well, I think it's interesting. Pete Thamel of Yahoo made this point that college coaches at high levels, you know, at schools where normally you'd look at and go, well, why would that guy ever leave that school? He could be the governor of the state. They're going to build a statue for him. There are going to be a lot more college head coaches, Seth, over the next year or two that are going to be giving serious thought to the NFL for a couple of reasons. One schematic, the two games are a lot more married now offensively than there's a lot more college elements making their way into the NFL than there used to be schematically. But the big one is that the transfer rules are getting much, much looser. These coaches are going to have way less control over their players from a player movement standpoint. And quite honestly, maybe even from just a marketing standpoint, these new name, image, and likeness rules are going to be coming up. There are going to be 17-year-olds that are going to want to know the plan when they're getting recruited for what opportunities there are to speak for car dealerships and sign autographs for an afternoon for $4,000. That's a thing. That's going to be happening here.
There's going to be a little less of the ability for college coaches to make $10 million a year and act like they're coaching amateur athletes.
That's right.
Like there's going to be a little less of that. That being in denial about all the actual stuff that's going on. And then I also wonder too, Sean, just given the state of athletic departments, other than at the big name programs and whatnot, just like what are the finances involved in supporting a college football team when you're trying to come back from all the budgetary hits you've taken as a university right now? I don't know. It's probably not going to affect the big name schools, but you do wonder if there's a little bit of a trickle down to coaches' salaries over the next several years, and maybe the NFL becomes a lot more competitive on a salary standpoint.
If not head coaches' salaries, and maybe even things that make it harder for you to do your job, like the salaries for your offensive and defensive coordinator for your staff.
The strength coach. Like strength some of these coach. Strength coaches that are making $500,000 a year.
Yeah. The other paragraph in this piece about Urban Meyer potentially.
Hold on a second. I got to make a note to self. Become a strength coach.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
These college strength coaches.
That would be a great combo business for you to combine that with your search firm that you're going to start. You know,
search firm, strength coach slash morning sports radio host.
I mean,
I'm never giving up this job until I get fired. I'm like, honestly, it's just too easy and it's too much fun.
Yes.
So I'm going to keep doing this while also being a strength coach slash search firm. Yeah.
Okay. Good. That's all I care about. How about this? This quote from an executive about Urban Meyer and the Texans specifically. Even though Urban has his own dysfunction questions to answer, I think a lot of people look at him for what he's done, and he's been positioned on Fox as this sort of leadership guy. From an organizational perspective, this is a guy who can right the ship, talking about the Texans. The culture overhaul should be in his wheelhouse. There are executives outside of the building with the Texans that clearly think that the Texans have a major culture issue inside the building.
Right, which is ironic because I think the...
It's tied to a former culture coach.
Yeah, like this... If we weren't right embroiled in the middle of all of this, this would be hilarious. But yes, the perceived cultural issues are all about the guy that you brought in to instill the right culture.
Correct.
So do with that what you will. I think the one thing you and I stumbled upon when we talked about this before was this, that if there's one guy that I trust to come in and use Easterby or get rid of Easterby as he sees fit, it's Urban Meyer. I think because, look, for whatever it's worth, Bill Belichick really liked having Jack Easterby around. You know, and that's something that multiple people will say, not just Jack Easterby and his agent. Other people say that. Yeah. That Bill Belichick very much valued and respected Jack Easterby's opinion. I don't personally think that Bill Belichick would have ever put Jack Easterby in the role he's in right now with the Texans.
Said he's not a personnel guy.
Yeah. So what that becomes is, all right, Urban Meyer and Bill Belichick are super tight. Urban Meyer will talk to Bill Belichick about Jack Easterby, and they'll figure out, you know, what his worth is, how can he be used. Does Urban Meyer just get sick of hearing from Jack Easterby, you know, in his constant positivity? Maybe he does. But I wouldn't worry. Like, if they hired Urban Meyer, I wouldn't worry for one second anymore that Jack Easterby was going to have an undue influence in the organization. If the Texans hired a younger coach, a little bit more of a babe in the woods, then I would start to worry about it a little bit.
Yeah, Seth, boy, is that a category that we need to add when we're looking at these candidates is – likelihood of winning a power struggle or managing Jack Easterby?
Well, because, okay, Urban Meyer also, we haven't even gotten to that side of it. Urban Meyer isn't going to be bossed around by a general manager either. You know, I don't think that he'll have a general manager. They're not going to make that mistake again. But would the Texans be more of a coach-driven or a GM-driven organization? I don't think Urban Meyer takes the job unless he gets the sense that he's calling the shots.
Yeah. And I know it's been reported they're going to go GM and then head coach. I don't expect that to necessarily be the case. I think if they find somebody good in either one of those roles, I think they're going to be ready to jump on good candidates. And if it happens to be the head coach first, it'll be the head coach first.
Yeah, I think I do. I'm with you there. I think we've been a little too married to what the Texans said early on, where they said they were going to hire a GM, then they were going to hire a head coach. I think that's more flexible than maybe we thought it was.
No doubt. All right, we got to take a look back at Week 16 of the NFL. We do the NFL Candy Store each and every Tuesday in the 8:30 segment. The theme this week is playing with fire. Teams that are jeopardizing, not the good kind of fire, teams that are jeopardizing their playoff hopes down the stretch. We will relive Week 16 and take a look ahead at what the scenarios are for the postseason in the NFL next. All right, each and every Tuesday, we take a look back at the week that was the NFL Candy Store. There's a theme each week. The theme this week is teams that are playing with fire, and in a bad way. The kind of fire that when you were a kid, you walked up to the fireplace and said, hey, that looks bright. I think I'll touch it. And then you found out the hard way that you shouldn't touch fire.
Childhood, right, is that the kids who really want to play with fire are generally the kids who should least be playing with fire.
Correct. Yeah. And there's a similar theme.
It's kind of like Dwayne Haskins and strippers.
A little bit. That's funny. Yeah. His team finds their way into this segment here, oddly enough. So these are teams that are jeopardizing their playoff hopes down the stretch. And we begin on Saturday, a game that was broadcast on Amazon Prime. Seth, did you stream the San Francisco 49ers and Arizona Cardinals on Amazon Prime on Saturday?
I did. There's just something, you know what it is with the streaming games? And they set a record for streaming audience. I think it was 11 million people streamed it either on Twitch. The lack of a DVR, it drives me insane because it feels like when you're streaming something, it should actually be easier to DVR than when you're watching on television.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm a dullard and there actually is a way to do it, but I've never been able to figure it out.
Well, there were a lot of people watching it, and a lot of people watched San Francisco, who mathematically was eliminated from the playoff race. They beat the Arizona Cardinals in Arizona. Not a great day for Kyler Murray.
And Kyler's going to throw a lob pass near sideline, picked off in the end zone. Intended for Christian Kirk, Kyler off his back foot, and it didn't have enough velocity on it. Never got to the intended receiver, Akello Witherspoon, with a critical red zone interception of Kyler Murray.
The darlings of the NFL through the first 2 months of the season was the Arizona Cardinals. DeAndre Hopkins has not slowed down. He's still leading the league. If it's not Stephon Diggs, it's DeAndre Hopkins leading the league in catches and yards. Diggs had a huge game last night. But Seth, the Arizona Cardinals were making a beeline for the postseason the first 2 months of the year. They're on the outside looking in right now at 8-7. They need to win in week 17 to get in. Their chances of getting into the playoffs down to 40.7%. And their most likely seed would be a seventh seed in the NFC. Kyler Murray not good. Kyler Murray not good in that game. Got banged up at the end of the game as well.
Kyler Murray not good in that game. Obviously, poor decision making hurt them as it has at times all year. And then I think Cliff Kingsbury, regardless of what happens, unless somehow the Cardinals go on a miraculous run, Cliff Kingsbury is immediately on the hot seat in training camp next year. I feel like all next season long, like Kyler Murray has to take that next step. Because right now, it's a whole lot of what you would expect out of an air raid quarterback. Hey, he can pepper the field with a short game. He can hit some deep balls. He can run with his legs. But he's not really transitioning into being an actual NFL quarterback yet. And people are going to blame Cliff Kingsbury first, and then somebody else will get a chance to come in and work with Kyler Murray. And then if it doesn't happen, then it'll be Kyler Murray's fault.
I 100% believe that if Cliff Kingsbury looked like Rob Ryan, you know, if he was sloppy with facial hair, he would not have his job right now. I'm not even joking.
Maybe he'd be better at his job because he'd be less distracted by the females.
By hair product and things like that. By Pilates.
Which is all the attention, like walking out and probably having women throwing panties at him.
That's right. All right, shifting gears away from the Cardinals and to the AFC. This was a game that actually, even though one team won and one team lost, neither team really benefited from the outcome of this game. The New York Jets beat the Cleveland Browns 23-16. Which eliminated them from the Trevor Lawrence sweepstakes. Cleveland, meanwhile, was staring a playoff spot potentially in the face. They win this game, they are in the driver's seat to at least get a wild card spot, if not stay in the race in the AFC North. Instead, they lose to the New York Jets, who are pulling out all the stops.
Braxton Berrios lines up in the backfield. It's a handoff to Ty Johnson, an end around, and throwing the ball down the sideline is Crowder. He's got Berrios inside the 10, 5, touchdown. The Jets with a reverse option pass, and the trick play works perfectly.
Yeah, that's the danger of playing these teams like the Jets in Week 16. They're like, screw it. Let's do that thing we did where we were joking around in practice and started whipping the ball all over the place, and they score a touchdown. Seth, Browns' chances of making the playoffs down to 53%, so still greater than a coin flip. The most likely seed for the Browns, again, like the Cardinals, would be a seventh seed in the AFC. They play the Steelers in Week 17. Not an easy task for the Browns.
And they have to... They have to beat the Steelers to make the playoffs, right?
Well, or they need, if a couple teams lose. Okay, you know, they're in a stew of about 5-10-5 teams right now.
They can clinch by beating the Steelers, and the Steelers can advance their position. So the Steelers are likely going to be playing to win unless Ben Roethlisberger tweaked something or something. So this is going to be tough. Now the Browns receivers will all be well rested, so there's that.
Yeah, they will, and presumably in uniform again. So the Browns, who Cleveland fans were probably, I would imagine, maybe getting a little giddy about getting back to the postseason for the first time in a couple of decades, not so fast. They are down to a coin flip's chance of making the playoffs. Meanwhile, you mentioned the Steelers, Seth, as we move along. Steelers were trailing the Colts for most of the afternoon on Sunday. They were trailing by 3 scores at one point early in this game. Bad Phillip Rivers, if you're a Colts fan, bad Phillip Rivers showed up in this game, threw a pick, fumbled a ball deep in Colts territory to get the Steelers back into the game. And the Steelers would wind up coming back, taking the lead in this game, and then late in the game got the stop that they needed.
Fourth down and 8 at the 33. Shotgun snap, he's back. Steps up, throws a pass down the field. Incomplete! It was intended inside the 15 for Zach Pascal. Off his hands, ball over on downs, and the Pittsburgh Steelers are in position now to secure the AFC North.
Which they wound up doing, so they win the division. Steelers still in a fight with the Bills for the 2 seed in the AFC. Not as meaningful as previous years because there's no bye for the 2 seed this year because they added a team to the playoffs in each conference. Seth, here's the strange thing about the Colts. right now, if the season were to end, they would be on the outside looking in. They would not be a playoff team. They are the 8 seed as it sits right now. And yet, they have an 80.4% chance of making the postseason because, A, they play the Jaguars in Week 17, so there's a good chance they're going to smoke the Jags in that game. Although the Jags can try now. They've clinched the Trevor Lawrence sweepstakes. But they have an 80.4% chance of making the playoffs, the Colts do, because if they beat the Jags, they just need one of those other four 10-5 teams, Ravens, Browns, Titans, Dolphins. They just need one of those teams to lose, and they'll be in the postseason. So there you go. Colts still have a great chance to make the postseason.
Yeah, the Colts can make the postseason. I don't think there's a person on earth that trusts Phillip Rivers to do anything with them in the postseason, right?
No.
I feel bad saying that because it's an easy narrative about Phillip Rivers, and now it's less about that narrative than it is that he's old and he can't be relied upon. This was in that game, which if you had told me at the half that the Steelers were going to win that game, I would have been very, very skeptical. The last 7 offensive possessions for the Colts were a punt, a field goal, a punt, an interception, and a turnover on downs.
Yeah.
They go anemic right quick at times. I guess the Steelers are going to have to be a little bit of like the 2000 Ravens, I think. It doesn't have to be all on offense, but that Steeler or all on their defense, but that Steelers offense is just so weird. They're the only team. They're the only team worse than them at rushing the football is the Houston Texans. That's how bad the Steelers rushing is. So when you think about Pittsburgh Steelers football, you think about like, oh, built to win in the cold, right? Defense and running the ball. Not the second part. They got a defense, but they do not run the ball well at all.
They don't. If you're going to beat the Steelers, then if you just prevent the big play, you can beat the Steelers, I think. You know, they've got some dynamic guys at wide receiver. They got playmakers, Claypool and Deontay Johnson, they've got Juju Smith-Schuster. As long as you can keep them from attacking downfield, which Roethlisberger is not good at anymore, then you can beat the Pittsburgh Steelers.
They haven't, you know, these days, when you look at, okay, how often do you score more than 30 points and how often do you do it versus good opponents? The Steelers never do. Like they've scored over 30 against a couple of the bad opponents this year. But when it comes to winning a shootout, I don't see how it could happen. And the Steelers defense, as good as it is, they have their weaknesses in the secondary. So when it comes to playing the Chiefs, especially, I just don't know. If I had to handicap it, I'm taking the Chiefs, no problem.
So you got the Cardinals who have played their way out of the postseason as of right now. They could get back in. You've got the Browns who played their way into severely damaging their playoff chances. You've got the Colts who are on the outside looking in right now. The Washington football team could have clinched the division on Sunday, Saturday, whatever day. They played Sunday against Carolina. Didn't do it. And not only did they not clinch the division, they benched their quarterback and then a day later cut their quarterback.
Taylor Heinicke, who was the COVID emergency quarterback as of 2 weeks ago, has probably practiced a handful of times with this team, is out on the field first and 10 at their own 8, down 2 scores. His first throw connects with Steven Sims Jr., who hops over a defender at the 15 to the 16. Gain of 8, he's 1-for-1.
Okay, so the bottom line is now, if Washington wins on Sunday against the Philadelphia Eagles, they'll get into the playoffs. They'll win that division. They'll be the 4 seed. They'll probably host the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in the first round of the playoffs. But Seth, this might be the most 2020 NFC East thing, that the team that can clinch the division with a win, the one team that controls their own destiny in the NFC East, is voluntarily starting Taylor Heinicke at quarterback just a few days after cutting their 15th overall pick in the draft quarterback on Monday.
Yeah, this is
This is the first-place team.
I guess you know what it goes to show you is, well, for one, Dwayne Haskins, especially without Terry McLaurin, just doesn't look like a guy that's a future of your franchise. But then also, who knows what's going on behind the scenes with Dwayne Haskins? Usually if a guy does enough boneheaded things publicly, there's probably 5 times as many things that go unreported. So I would love to hear, now that he's been cut, hopefully maybe some of the stories will start to leak out.
Ooh, yeah.
You know, usually some people get a little bit more loose-lipped about just how a guy wasn't showing up until noon and stuff like that. Maybe we'll start to hear some of that stuff to sustain us through this last week.
All right, so the Washington football team has played their way onto the playoff bubble. Meanwhile,
did you, by the way, because we were off for most of last week,
yeah.
I kind of regret that. I feel like I missed out completely on the whole Dwayne Haskins stuff. I really was barely even paying attention to the
COVID
the fact that
stuff.
Yeah,
the strip
to
club.
His COVID violation. But yeah. then apparently he was redeemed. We talked a little bit about the strip club COVID violation. But then apparently he redeemed himself by saying he was sorry and that he needed to take responsibility.
Yeah.
And like that's all it takes. All you have to do is publicly say, like, I take responsibility. And football writers will say, well, it's very clear that he's grown up a lot.
Yeah.
It's very clear that he's learned his lesson.
That's all it takes until you're cut 5 days
yeah,
later.
Yeah, yeah.
Ron Rivera wasn't buying it, and that's the only guy
Boy,
that matters.
I'm shocked. I'm shocked that he was cut. He did spend 20 seconds saying that he changed his ways in a press conference.
Right, posting a JPEG with a heartfelt statement on it on his Twitter yeah. account last week. All right, meanwhile, the next team to play their way onto the playoff bubble was a team that was actually leading the NFC West, one of the toughest divisions in football. They were leading this division 2 weeks ago. Not anymore. The Los Angeles Rams lose to the Seattle Seahawks 20-9 in a game that was a really low-scoring game for most of the game until Russell Wilson took control in the third quarter.
First and goal from the four. Will Disley wings on the right side now. Russell on the move, left side. Pulls it down. He's going to run. He's going to get it in. Touchdown, Seahawks!
Now, the Rams, Seth, their playoff chances are still very, very high. They're 9-6 right now. They can still get in even if they lose on Sunday. Their chances of getting into the playoffs are 86.4%. The issue for the Rams is that it looks like they're going to be going into this game without Jared Goff, who underwent thumb surgery yesterday, and they are set to re-sign Blake Bortles. I don't know that that means that Bortles is going to start. I had seen another name of a player. I think Walford was his last name. John Walford, the fill-in starter.
Yep.
The bottom line is the Rams, look, this is where we get to see how much of a boy genius Sean McVay is. You got to go into a game here that's a near must-win situation, and you got to cobble together a game plan, boy genius. Let's
Sean,
see what you can do.
Yeah. You say that kind of sarcastically,
yes.
But he did almost score two touchdowns in the Super Bowl a couple of years back. That was did they score a touchdown?
No, they lost 13-3.
Right, that's right. That's right. That's right. They didn't. He did almost score a touchdown. They did not get shut out
right. In
the Super Bowl that year. And then he saw fit to fire Wade Phillips not too long after that.
Yeah, it was Wade Phillips' fault. They lost 13-3 in the
yeah.
Super Bowl. That's the greatest team of our generation.
Let me ask you this,
yeah.
Not really related to Jared Goff, who I have no idea what to make of. Defensive player of the year right now, who do you think gets it, T.J. Watt or Aaron Donald?
Aaron Donald.
You think so?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Aaron Donald.
I think T.J. Watt gets it.
Do you?
I think T.J. Watt, ironically enough, for a team that plays in Los Angeles, the media capital of the whole universe, I don't feel like Aaron Donald actually gets enough play time on primetime games in big moments. And his team isn't as good as T.J. Watt. You could convince me of either guy, either way. Like Aaron Donald is a physical freak who commands so much damn attention, and it's almost beyond belief how talented he is. And yet T.J. Watt has the advantage of playing for the Steelers with a better record. I think better box score stats. And just kind of gets a little bit more shine. I think T.J. Watt ends up winning.
I think Donald already has that shine, and I will point you to J.J. Watt when he won his third Defensive Player of the Year award, was playing on a team where Brian Hoyer and Ryan Mallett were the quarterbacks, and they were 9-7 that year. You know, J.J. wasn't playing a whole lot of primetime games either that year.
Good point.
And everybody knew who J.J. Watt was at that point. You know?
And again, even though I gushed all that praise on Aaron Donald, I encourage anybody who wants to look and see how J.J., in the 3 years that he was defensive MVP, had averages along the statistical categories like QB hits, tackles for loss, and whatnot that Aaron Donald has never achieved in a single season.
That is a fair point.
In the NFL. JJ, well, now, and also to be fair though, JJ played more on the edge than Aaron Donald does right now. But JJ's statistical domination was like unlike anything I've ever seen from a defensive lineman.
It was crazy, no doubt. Those were fun times. Last one, teams that have played their way onto the playoff bubble. The Tennessee Titans still have a great chance of making the postseason, 91%. They could have clinched the AFC South on Sunday, though, with a good performance in Green Bay. Not only did they not have a good performance, they barely showed up.
Rodgers from under center, turns around, fakes a handoff, sets up the throw, surveys over the middle, caught, touchdown. Guess who? Devontae Adams, his third touchdown of the night.
So that was Green Bay 40-14 over the Tennessee Titans. So the Tennessee Titans come into this game on week 17 against the Texans. Seth, not a desperate team, but I would imagine an angry team coming into this week.
That would be feel good. You know what? I'm glad you brought up the Titans and brought them up last, because I got to start getting some juice for this week. Do I allow myself to get excited about the prospect of the Texans being spoilers for the Titans?
Does that feel like a loser mentality to get excited about being a spoiler?
No. Okay. I think the winner mentality is to want to embarrass your opponent any chance you get.
It's not enough to
just win and be a good sportsman about it. You need to win and be a good sportsman while secretly delighting in the fact that you embarrass your opponent in front of his wife, his children, his mother, all of those things. You want his family to look kind of sideways at him because they're embarrassed that he got beat so badly in front of you.
That sounds about right. All right, download the Radio.com app, and you can rewind to the beginning of the show. It's really cool. The Radio.com app has been money for a lot of you. I know that. Download it today. You can take the station with you wherever you go. We head into the 9 o'clock hour. The AFC South quarterback situation is about to get bananas next year. Where does this quartet or this potential quartet of quarterbacks stack up? We'll discuss it next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. Audacy. Download it today.